After you're done greeting, go ahead and have a seat. We're really excited you're here today. My name is Kurt Walters. I'm lead pastor here at Cross Point. And as Eric said, we do have a great service plan today. Before we do anything else, I want to introduce you to someone today. This is Tori Hsu. And Tori, you're going to see around here a lot, especially if you have kids or students. Tori just began with us at the beginning of this month as our Director of Children's Environments and Student Ministry Environments. And so we are really excited to have Tori on our team and excited to have her husband Cam and their children Wesley and Mason here with us as well. And over the last few years, we have been growing and building toward this position being a full-time position as we continue to prepare toward our launch pad, this place where we're going to be able to have as a home for Cross Point as we're in the process of developing right now. So right now we're developing a lot of infrastructure that allows us to build our systems out and increase our ministry to our families, our children, and the roles in each of these areas, children and students, have continued to grow. And so we're at the point now where we're able to bring this into a full-time position, and we've brought Tori on board. We're excited to introduce her to you, and she's got a lot of excitement. You're going to love her as you get a chance to meet her, and just share with us a little, Tori, about what you're most excited about. I know you're excited about a lot of things, but as you've gotten on board here and began, what are you just excited about God doing here?
Good. Well, I'm super excited that I finally figured out what I want to be when I get older, and I am
We help people do that, by the way.
Thanks for that. I know now why I've had all the experiences that I've had in my life, because they've really shaped me and put all my passions into one place, and that's here. Children, families, God, serving, all of that is coming together in this role, and I'm so excited to help others see their potential in serving and leading folks in student ministries and children's ministries.
Awesome. You know, I know when we did a pretty extensive interview process as we're kind of going after a few people that we really thought could fill this position well. And when I saw Tori's resume, she worked for some of my favorite teams ever, like Team Disney. Team Disney, one of my favorite teams. You work for ESPN. These are my favorite teams, people. And so I'm like, how could you not hire somebody like this? It went way, way beyond that. But I know you've learned a lot. A lot of those experiences have even shaped what you're going to be doing here.
Sure. My one takeaway from all of those roles that I've had up till this point is that you've got one shot to make a first impression. And in Disney, especially when you're greeting guests and you're seeing guests and they're coming through your lines, I think, man, they have saved pennies, many of them, in jars on the top of their refrigerator. Dad's been dropping change in there. Mom's been dropping change in there. That's their one shot. And I'm responsible for making that impression for them. And as I carry that over here into Cross Point, many of you invite friends, you're praying for neighbors, you want to bring them along. And I'm responsible back in the children's areas and the student areas to make that first impression and lead people to make that first impression and make it something that they want to continue to come back to. So that's been really valuable in my experiences.
Awesome. You know, we build a lot for children around here, for students around here. In fact, about a third of the people in the building right now are students that are outside of this room in their environments. And our goal is to show students who Jesus really is. I mean, for them to understand him, experience him, and we realize the value of what happens at this particular age and all the way through our student years. So really excited that Tori's going to be leading this for us. Take a moment, get to know her. You'll often see her. She's got her yellow shoes on, but you will see her in her yellow shirt often because that's what our children volunteers often wear out in the check-in area. Connect with her. You're going to love to do that. On the student ministry end, we've got a really important event. In fact, a number of events coming up over the summer that are just really important for connection. Tell us a little bit about the one coming up here in a couple weekends.
Sure. On Friday, June 29th, we're going to take a group to Kings Island. And we are so excited about that. It's so much more than riding rides at an amusement park, especially for me. Student ministry is near and dear to my heart. I'm just excited to fellowship with these kids, have them fellowship with one another, build relationships. I think a lot of times events like this are what connect those kids and then bring them to our weekly meetings. And there'll be more of them throughout the summer. I've got, there's information in the weekly about that. And if you are not connected in the student ministry and you want to, please, please, please let me know. Reach out to me. Give me your email address so that I can keep you up to speed on all that's going on. We've got some really exciting stuff coming up this summer.
Yeah, so these are great opportunities to get for students, 7th to 12th grade, to get to know Tori, to really get connected, because, you know, we come to know Jesus through relationships. It happened for you, happened for me that way. And so this is a really important event. So you can mark that on the back of your connection card if you have students that would like more information or would like to attend, and Tori will be in touch with you. So we're really excited to have her here. I want to pray for her today. You know, as you begin this role, Tori, it's a big role. And we want to offer our blessing on you and your ministry and just what you're going to be doing among us. So let me do that real quick here. God, I thank you for Tori, for Cam, for their family, for the way that they've kind of reoriented their lives recently to begin connecting with Crosspoint and be a part of the ministry. And not just being a part of this, but leading the ministry here to our children and students, God. That's what we've called her to come here and do, to create environments where students and children can see Jesus for who he really is. And God, we realize there's a significant thing that happens when students experience you regardless of their age. And so God, I would pray that you would help her to lead well. I pray your blessing on her and that you would give her a vision for ways that we can continue to connect with families. And God, I would pray for this community that we might be a people that come alongside Tori and the many leaders we have in these areas and serve and be the hands and feet that walk out loving these kids every week in and out of here so they can see you for who you are, God. And so we just ask for your blessing on her. We thank you that Tori and Cam are here, and we just ask and look forward to great, great days ahead for our families and for the ministry here at Crosspoint in Christ's name. Thank you, Tori. Let's thank Tori for being here today, and welcome her. Thank you. Well, happy Father's Day. You know, this is a day, as Eric said, where we recognize our fathers that have played roles in our lives, and at least those father figures, and we realize that, you know, many of us, there's very fond memories like I have of my father and the role he played in my life, and yet for others of us, we realize that some of those memories aren't so fond, or maybe there really wasn't a significant father figure in our lives, and so we all do fall at different places on this, but and there's a variety of reasons on that, but we're excited. We want to thank you and honor you, dads, who are here today. And we are in the second week of this series, You've Got Mail, Words to Live By for Life That's More Than Getting By. And we really believe that Jesus has some things to say about living in ways that help us to do more than just eking by. You know, none of us want to just get by. We want to thrive. And yet, we don't often know how. So we're taking a look at some of those concepts. And today, I really do want to speak to the guys in the room for the next few minutes. You know, it's very uncharacteristic of me to really segment who I'm speaking to. But, you know, maybe it's because of the context of Father's Day, because I didn't do this on Mother's Day. Maybe it's the theme of what we're talking about today. But if I could, I really want to speak directly to the men in the room today, to the fathers, to those of you who one day may be a father. And women, we're going to let you stay as well. We're glad you're here as well. And actually, I hope you do stay, because these are really important things for you to get as well. And there's going to be stuff for you later after this first segment as well. But, you know, what I hope you can understand is I wish I could get every guy in this room into an event, a venue, where we could speak just as men about things. And so I want to do that for a few minutes at least here on the front end. And I'm going to ask women for your umbrella of grace and mercy in these next few moments. All right, there's going to be things I may say, and you may be thinking, well, that's true of me too. That's not just true of men. And yeah, I'm going to ask for your umbrella of grace on this, because I want to really speak directly to the men here today. And you might feel like it's a little exclusive, but I believe that there's some things that are going to be really good for all of us to hear. So before we do that, let's just pray again. God, I am thankful for every single one of us in this room right now, for every man, for every woman, for every child that's in the building this morning. I ask that you would help us to go to new places today. I ask that you would help me to be articulate and clear, and most importantly, God, help me to be helpful in everything I say and everything we do over these next moments. I would ask that you would use my words to that end. And God, I pray these things in your character and in the character of this scene, in the great man, the way you, God, revealed yourself in the form of flesh and blood in this world, Jesus. Well, you know, if you've been around this place for any time at all, you have realized that Crosspoint's a pretty unusual place. I mean, there's kind of unusual things, ways we go about things around here, what you experience in this room. And one of the really unusual things about Crosspoint is the percentage of men that are involved and engaged in this community. And this is very rare. It is very rare to have the percentage of men that we have here at Crosspoint engage in a church community. And it is an absolute blessing to us. I mean, when we have men involved in Wombaland and Up Street and Area 56 and Kids Club and Kids Check-In and directly pouring themselves into a number of places around here, but specifically into some of our children's environments, we are very blessed by this. And this is very, very unusual. In fact, there's a plague that's been sweeping across American churches. In fact, it's really been sweeping across the world, really, in many ways, where men are just not attracted to churches. They're just not attracted to the ways that churches do things. And in fact, there was a fascinating book that came out a few years ago, and it was called Why Men Hate Going to Church. And this book kind of cataloged, in a sense, the ways that we either intentionally or accidentally in churches do things and make church happen, kind of the system of how we work, that really goes against the very masculine mindset that men have. I mean, men, they want adventure. You know, we want a point. We want there to be a purpose to what we're doing. You know, we don't want to just go into a gathering or meeting and hang out and sit around, as much as it might be and as nice as people may be there. We want to have a point and a purpose. In fact, one of the things in this book that was said was this: churches in the Titanic have something in common. It's women and children first. Think about that for a moment. And the result, just as the Titanic went down a number of years ago, so our churches are going down today. I mean, they are going down on every front, and there's really no positive statistics out there on how the church is advancing on this. And so, you know, one of the things we did early on when Crosspoint began just over 5 years ago is we began to realize that if we can communicate to guys, then everybody wins on that. And it's not that we don't want to communicate to women. We got to communicate to women too. But if we can communicate with guys at their level and their vernacular, you know, we win. You win. Everybody wins. And so we began thinking this way. How do we communicate to guys? How do we plan services that are geared toward connecting guys with a point, with impact, where I have something that I can go out and I can do? You know, and as a result of this, you know, we see an enormous amount of guys that are connecting. We're thinking about this as we're designing the early phases of our building, of this next launch pad. How can we create a place that guys really connect with? And there's another book a few years ago. You may have read it, maybe remember it. Men Are from Mars, Women Are from Venus. And I remember it talking about how, you know, women love to go to tea. And they like to sit around relationally and connect. And it's not that men don't like to do that. I mean, you can sit around with very nice people. I sit around and drink coffee with guys every now and then. But again, men want more than that. They, you know, men are hunters. We want to hunt and kill and celebrate. You know, we want there to be a point to what we're doing, a purpose to what we're doing. And, you know, I'm not a hunter. I used to be a hunter. I used to hunt like squirrels and rabbits. I know it's weird. And, you know, what do you do with those things when you kill them, right? But, you know, I don't do that anymore. But, you know, I still want to go after things. I still want to go after things and do it and accomplish it and then celebrate it at the end. And here at Crosspoint, you know, we've tried to create adventure for you. Every week in our services, we're on an adventure. In fact, we're an adventure at large, and we call it a journey around here. You know, we're in this adventure that it's called the Crazy Journey, and we're going after something. We're building something. There's, you know, it's this next launch pad for Crosspoint. It's adventuresome to us. It's adventuresome for me. You know, there's points where, you know, when we look at what's ahead of us, as I shared a few weekends ago, God's dream for churches always outpaces what they can do financially. It always is the case. I've never met a pastor, never met a consultant that's told me that, yeah, this church, man, they had everything they needed to accomplish God's dream. That's why it's an adventure. It's a journey, because God challenges, calls us, asks us to risk, to go out on the edge. And I tell you what, the journey that we're on, I mean, there's exhilarating moments in this. There's moments where it equates to like when my wife and I were biking down Pike's Peak, 22 miles downhill most of the way. And every now and then you go uphill, and I feel the uphill strain at times. But, you know, it's an adventure. You know, there's something adventuresome about going out on the edge of a cliff and saying, God, I mean, you have got to show up. And we're going to go out here in faith with you, and we're going to trust that as we do this, I mean, you are going to show up, and we are going to wait and see what you do. There's an adventure in this. Just this week, we were sitting with our strategic team, who's kind of the overseeing team for this crazy project. And we were on a WebEx conference talking with one of the building strategists we're connecting with. And this guy, Dan Cook, said something really fascinating. It was just awesome what he said. He said, you know, and women, if you ever wonder why we do some of the things we do around here, why I speak and say certain things about bodily functions and how some of the Father's Day cards seem to talk these days, you know, this is why we're trying to connect with the men in your life, the husbands you bring, the maybe the other men that you're dating or seeing, whatever that might be. Men, you know, I really hope in these statistics you see the value of why we create things that you can connect with. Here are some statistics from Harvard Seminary, a study they did recently. And these are statistics, all right? Single moms who bring their kids to church by themselves, over the course of time, 2% of those kids will later in their life stay connected to church. Now moms play a significant role. Women are often the spiritual drivers in the home when it comes to spiritual things. Men, you and I are called to this. All right, women, I want you to see this as not being an important role, but there's a role that men play that is critical in this. And one of the things we're seeing with the millennial generation, that's different than previous generations is that, you know, previous generations, children would be raised in the home, they'd go off to college or go on to work, they kind of disconnect from their spiritual heritage, and eventually they'd get married, they'd have kids, and then at that point, usually if not before, they'd reconnect back to some of the spiritual things. They'd want that to be a part of their kids' lives. Today in the millennial generation, we're not seeing that. Kids disconnect from church, and they stay disconnected even into their family lives, getting married later and later, not returning to church. Look at this statistic. Single dads who bring their kids to church by themselves, 44% of their kids will stay connected later in life. It's a significant thing that happens when men, don't want you to see it as an undermining of the role of women, but when men say, hey, I'm in on this thing and I'm engaging, there's something significant that does for your kids. Look at these. For every 100 women that connect at church, that translates into 13 families, full families getting connected. For every 100 men that connect with the church, when a man says, hey, I'm going to take a spiritual leave and be engaged, 88 of those 100 families will then connect to church. Men, way to go for being here today. I just want to give you a hand. Way to go. I mean, this is significant. This is really big. This is why I'm excited, why I see so many men connected around here. Now, Martin Luther, who was... He really wanted to reform the kind of medieval Catholic Church a number of years ago. He ended up getting booted out. It went really south on him, and it kind of went bad. But this was the beginning of Protestantism. This is where Protestantism began. And the founder of the Protestant movement, here's what he said about himself here. He said, I am rough, boisterous, stormy, and altogether warlike. I am bored to fight against innumerable monsters and devils. I must remove stumps and stones, cut away thistles and thorns, and clear away wild forests. Now, let me tell you something. If I would have said that in my ordination dissertation, they would have flunked me. They would have been like, dude, you are not cut out for this work. We need nice people to be pastors. You are not a... Now, I knew that, so I kind of did it very cautiously, because I'm a little more like this than I am typical pastors. But you know, here's the deal. Here's what this is saying right here. It doesn't mean we need to go out and, you know, be rough and boisterous and fighting monsters and devils all the time. What it means, though, is as men, we crave and want adventure. We crave and want adventure. We crave and want a father or a father figure, a male figure, to build into us and tell us, I am well pleased with you. I am well pleased with you. We long for that. I mean, the one thing I know about every single man in this room, even though I don't know every single one of you, is this, that every single man wants to be affirmed and blessed by his father, or at least a father figure. I know that. And for many of us, we're still doing things to try to earn our father's approval because we've never received that. You know, we may be 45, 50 years old, still trying to go after our father's approval because we long for this blessing from our father. We long to hear that those words or get that nod or that kind of look in the eyes that says, hey, well done. I am proud of you. I affirm you. I mean, every man needs this, including Jesus. Take a look at where Jesus got this. Jesus got this when he was baptized. He got this in the book of Matthew. We read this. This is what the authorized biographer of Jesus' life, Matthew, records about this experience. It says, and a voice from heaven said, this is my son whom I love, and with him I am well pleased. I mean, this was huge to Jesus right here. Even Jesus needed that blessing, that affirmation. And so, you know, there are many ways this can happen. I mean, there may be moments, you know, I'm starting to think about that with my son. You know, how am I building into him so that when he gets to that age where he's going to go off on his own, I can give him that official nod. But you see, it doesn't just begin and end with that official nod when he's ready to go off on his own. There's all these little points in between where I can affirm and bless and kind of encourage and come alongside and get engaged in his world and build into him and say, hey, son, I am proud of you. Along with the disciplining, along with the instructing, where I can say, son, I am pleased with you. A critical, critical part of this. And so I want to give us some pictures over the rest of this morning of what that looks like, not just for men, but for women, for all of us, of how we can build and invest in children in our lives, whether you're a parent, not a parent, one day hope to be a parent of grown kids. These apply across the board. So in order to do that, I want you to take a look at this video to start that is about a kid by the name of Kane. And Kane created an arcade, and this is just one of the ways his dad began to kind of build in and believe in this dream his son had. So take a look.
My name's Kane, and I'm 9 years old. My arcade is called Kane's Arcade. It's open till weekends only, and it's really cheap.
Kane does not pass by a K without stopping in. He loves tickets, playing games. He loves prizes. So it was only natural for him to build his own arcade. He loves to see how things are built. He takes all his toys apart to see how they work. He can't put them back together, but he takes them apart. Kane spent summer vacation coming to work with me. We sell auto parts in East LA.
My dad has a lot of boxes back there to ship parts out, so I cut them up and make my arcade games out of it. My first game I made, the basketball hoop I got at Shakey's Pizza, and it's really cool.
He taped it onto a box, and he was offering people chances to play for like a nickel. He started from that little game, and little by little, they started getting fancier and fancier, and eventually he took over the whole store.
I met Kane randomly. I had to get a door handle for my 96 Corolla, so I pulled into this used auto parts store, and I just came across this elaborate cardboard arcade. I asked him how much it was to play. He's like, for $1 you get 4 turns, but for $2 you get a fun pass. Like, well, how many turns do you get a fun pass? You get 500 turns for a fun pass. I got a fun pass.
I made this fun pass that expires in 1 month, and you get 500 plays or any of these games. Like a great deal. And I started making my office. It has like a speaker on the other side I could talk through. I got tokens, my business card, fun passes, and prizes. First prizes, I used my own toys, like the cars were my own toys. I used to like Hot Wheels when I was little.
I worked from the back office, and it kept them out of my hair all summer. He would work on the arcade, I'd work on eBay.
My next game I built was a soccer game. First of all, didn't have no goalies. People said it was too easy, so I bought army goalies, and those are my blockers. I told them, is it easy now? It's pretty hard, so you get 2 tickets to make it in here. I'll give it a 4-star. Hard game, challenging game. 4-star.
One day, Kane tells me, Dad, I want to buy a claw machine. I said, why don't you just build it? So he got an S-hook, put a piece of yarn on it, and then put a little track on top of the box. And I said, what the heck? He figured out how to make a claw machine with a string and a hook.
And here's some sunglasses. These are the glasses I like the most. Star sunglasses.
He bought calculators to put on every arcade game. And I go, what's that for?
The calculators are here for security to see if it's a real fun pass or not. On the back, the fun pass has security number. So when you go here, you have to turn it on, you put the pin number in it, and you push a check mark button, and the big number comes out. That's how you know it's a real fun pass.
My dad started the business in 1955. We have used auto parts. Most of our business has gone online because we really don't get the walk-up traffic like we used to. So Kane's chance of getting one customer is pretty hard. Kane's always waiting in front, sitting on his little chair, and trying to convince people to play. But not too much luck.
Kane's Arcade grand opening.
But he never gets discouraged. He's always sweeping up and dusting off the games, waiting for customers. He only wears a shirt on Saturdays and Sundays when he comes to open up his arcade. And he's really proud of his shirt because he thought it up and he designed it. When Kane got back to school from vacation, he started telling everybody that he had an arcade. And nobody believed him. So he won't wear his shirt to school because he's afraid that kids might tease him about it. You know, he told them, hey, I got my own arcade. And they go, yeah, sure.
And what a great, great story, right? I mean, you talk about a kid, I mean, that line, you know, he never gets discouraged. I mean, he shows up every day, even though he has no customers. You know why? Because he's got a dad pouring into him, saying, hey, keep going. He's getting into his world. He's embracing creativity. He's saying, son, I believe in you through his actions and through his words. And so, you know, over these next few minutes, I really want to just kind of paint pictures for you. Say, you know, as we talk about this idea of a life that's more than getting by, last week we looked at play. This week I want to talk about replay. How do we replay? How do we continue to engage, not just once, but in ongoing ways with children in our lives, with our own children in ways that help them kind of have that esteem built into them, that affirmation, that blessing that they're looking for from us. And so I'm going to share some things that I've been discovering over the last few years as I've grown as a parent, still growing. You might hear them and be like, Kurt, I do that better than you do. That's fine. I mean, you may be way better than me at this. One of the ways I never run out of teaching material is to talk about things where I struggle. This is where I struggle. You know, you probably struggle with this as well. And so these are just some of the things I've learned. And here's one of them right here. When I purposefully play and replay with my kids, I affirm and bless them. I mean, have you ever noticed how kids, they will play the same thing over and over and over again, and it never gets boring? I mean, it's like, do it again. I mean, it reminds me what the heart of God, I think, is like. I mean, I think God, you know, sits back sometimes and looks at the sunrises and the sunsets every day, and he looks across heaven, he says to Jesus, oh, that was beautiful, let's do it again tomorrow. And then the next day comes, he says, let's do it again tomorrow. Let's do it again tomorrow. I mean, I think this is actually the heart of what God is about. And kids get this. Kids get this. I mean, this is at the core of who they are. Last week, we were out at tennis lessons. I'm holding the volleyball. We were at tennis lessons. And our five-year-old, early in the morning, had tennis lessons with one of our friends who's giving them to our three oldest kids. And our five-year-old was in a lesson, and so my daughter took the volleyball to kind of pass around while we were waiting for her lesson to end. Till it was her turn to play. So we're on one of the tennis courts, you know, we're passing the volleyball back and forth and, you know, hitting it over. And of course, it's a low net, but it's teaching them, you know, of course, how to play and so on. You know, at the end of the half hour, they went and played tennis, finished their lesson. We went on, I went home, dropped them off, went on to work for the day, you know, got home that evening. Was sitting at my computer later that evening, sometime, you know, after dinner, and Macy came up to me and she said, Dad, let's go play volleyball again. I said, Macy, we've already done that. I need you to go outside and find something else to do. I've got work to do. The look and disappointment on her face could have killed me. She looked at me, she said, Dad, but that was earlier. And I thought, you're right. Because he kids love to just do it and again and again. I mean, in my mind, I'm like, I've done that once today. And yet, you know, this whole idea of replaying, of re-engaging, of not just saying, yeah, I invested once, but how do I invest in an ongoing way? You see, I think sometimes we forget as adults that what it really means to play. I mean, for kids, play is primal. And doing it over and over again is primal. I mean, this is what continues to keep us out of the ruts of just getting by. You know, we talked about neurochemistry last week and the synaptic connections that are made in our brains and how, you know, when we're oftentimes depression is when we're in a rut and play actually takes us out of that rut. And it's a lot deeper than that. That's kind of the overview of this. And, you know, when I think about this, I think, you know, if we think about dogs, oftentimes we're much more like wolves than we are like labs. You know, wolves, think about wolves for a moment. Wolves, when they're little, they play. They play with their cubs and their brothers, sisters, whatever they might be. And then eventually they grow up and they are all about surviving. They're all about getting the job done, about marking territory, about dominance, about mating. Play vanishes from their lives. I mean, they're all about conquer and kill and move on to the next thing. They're about survival and just getting by. But I think God created us to be a little more like labs than wolves. Now, we have a dog in our house right now. It's fairly new. And the verdict's out. I'm not sure. I'm loving it. Not sure about that yet. His name's Lucky. I think he's not so lucky right now. But you know, we used to have a lab. We used to have a chocolate lab. And I tell you what, you know what I love about labs? Every day, every moment is a great time to play. I mean, I would no more than pull into the driveway, and Callie would come running with Frisbee in mouth, ready to play. I mean, every day, every moment is a great time to play. And I think some of us have lost this primal thing of just engaging in play. And the same thing over and over at times. Kids have it. We lose it. We like wolves, have become constant conquerors, constant lookers at the last quarterly earnings report, constant lookers at the to-do list. We forget this primal urge to play. It's a primal thing. Children get it, and they want to do it over and over again. We invest in them. We renew ourselves. We recreate ourselves when we do this. But we also affirm and bless them. Look at what Jesus said. He said, I tell you the truth. Unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Now, This is a loaded statement that Jesus said right here. Loaded. There are all kinds of things he was saying here right here. And what he's not saying, hey, you don't need to grow out of your childish temper tantrums. It's okay if you go to the movie theater and just go off like you're a 12-year-old, you know, at the person on the other side of the register. I have seen someone do that I know. It is embarrassing to me. Like, they need to move on. They never got past like 10 years old and how you acted then. This isn't what Jesus is talking about here. But the same way, he is saying, there are certain things, unless you change and in many ways take on the mindset of a child, don't become stupid, don't become less learned, you take on the life, the mindset of a child, in many ways you're not going to see what the kingdom of God is like. God created play. He created recreation for us to recreate ourselves on a regular basis. Children know how to do it. You and I, we forget about it. I think he's saying, hey, if you can't get in the mindset of a child on this and just find pleasure and joy in this very thing, this very gift I gave you, you're going to have a hard time seeing the kingdom. Hard time. It's part of how you are created to recreate yourself, to refresh, to refuel. And when you do this with your children, you actually affirm. It's a part of how you build into them. You have to be purposeful in this. Second thing. I know some of us have kids, some of us don't have kids, some of us have grown kids, some of us have little kids, some of us one day hope to have kids. Probably many of us have kids around us or serve kids in some way. Here's what I've learned. Raising kids is hard work. I don't know if you agree with that. It is hard work. And what I find is oftentimes I find myself just trying to endure and get by. You know, in our home, mornings start very early, and kids are up, and we're getting them ready, and during the school year, Julie's trying to get to school, and I'm trying to get to work, and, you know, she helps get them ready to a certain point, then I take it and get them to the bus stop, and then drop the other two off at preschool, and, you know, by the time I get to, like, my first meeting at 9:15 or 9:30, I am spent. I mean, I'm, like, ready for a nap. I'm like, it should be noon, and I should get a rest right now, and I've got to go into, like, meetings. And so, you know, it's common. I'll walk out of the preschool, and I'll hear, you know, other moms or dads dropping their kids off saying, oh, yeah, man, won't you be glad when they're, like, in kindergarten next year, and we don't have to pay tuition, and they're going to be there all day, and we don't have to, you know, pick them up. And, you know, I'm like, no, I don't want that. I don't want to endure this season right now, as hard as it is. As much chaos as it creates for our life, I don't want to just endure this season till I get there. I want to raise my kids. I want to be actively a part of raising my kids, and it's hard. It's hard. I mean, you know, I've been discovering this. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, when we're raising kids, you know, life is messy. Life is messy. There's a lot of demands. It means that our house is probably not picked up like we want it to be when we leave the house some mornings. It means that, you know, body beautiful isn't as beautiful sometimes because I don't have time to work out as much as I would like to, you know, because I'm investing in raising my kids because it takes an active part, an active investment in doing that. And there are other things that may not get with them. It means my yard at times does not look as manicured as the lawns next door to us because, hey, we're raising kids. In fact, a week and a half ago, we were out in the backyard. It was my day off, and we have this little areas underneath our playset where the swings are. And underneath there, we cannot get grass to grow. As hard as we've tried and reseeded, and there are these big wore-out places where the kids drag their feet when they swing. And about a week and a half ago, one of my kids came and said, hey, Dad, could we dig in this dirt right here for crystals? I'm like, well, you're welcome to dig, but crystals? And they're like, yeah, crystals, they're only a foot underground. I'm like, really? So I went inside and got them butter knives and, you know, some teaspoons and screwdrivers, and one of the other neighborhood kids brought over like a dandelion picker-upper thing, and, you know, and all of a sudden they're digging. They're having a full-out archaeological dig right in our backyard. Here's a picture of them right here. And here's the cool thing. This thing went on for 5 hours. 5 hours. This started like noon at dinner time. We were having them wrap it up. They went inside my daughter, my fourth grade daughter. They were allowed to buy their fourth grade textbooks at the end of the school year. Their science books. She went and paid $1 and brought her science book home. I don't know why, but that's the kind of kid she is. And so she went in and got her science book and opens it to the rock. Like chapter, and they're like comparing rocks, like we have crystals and we have this and that. I mean, the neighborhood kids were coming. There's like 8 or 9 kids at one point gathered around this hole that kept getting deeper and deeper into our yard. And so our other neighbor, one of our neighbors came over whose daughter was out here. It's like she came home from work and she came running over, kind of yelling at the daughter. She's like, oh my word, stop digging. What are you guys doing? And she ran over to me. She's like, hey, they're digging up your yard. Is it okay? While she's yelling at her daughter along the way, I'm like, yeah, it's fine. I told them it's okay. And then there was something about that bothered me. I don't know what it was. I mean, I appreciated her asking if it was okay. But like, it was like, I'm like, isn't this what kids are supposed to do? I mean, isn't being creative and make-believing and thinking crystals really are just a foot down? Isn't that what, like, as kids you're supposed to be doing? And we were sitting at dinner on our back patio later that evening, and they were back digging again at it. And Julie and I were talking, and I was talking about that with her. And I said to Julie, I said, you know, I said something I heard a few years ago. I said, Julie, you know, we are raising kids right now, not grass. I mean, you know, yeah, it's not like I want my kids to just tear the yard up, but I mean, we are raising kids. You know, the grass one day will come. But man, it's hard. It means things aren't always the way that we want them in the place that we want them. And when I get into their make-believe world and invest and believe and play over and over and let them do it again the next day, these are some of the ways that I affirm and I actually give blessing to my children. Third thing that I've been learning, and this has been an ongoing process for me, is that playtime is not wasted time. And there's a lot of other things I've been learning. These are the three I can tell you about today. Playtime is not wasted time. Garrison Keillor, remember he was like the great American storyteller of a number of years ago. He used to be on TV. He said, nothing you do for a child is ever wasted. Nothing. And I've been growing in that because I always thought, man, this is for kids. Playtime is for kids. I've been growing in what it means and realizing when I am playing and replaying and replaying and doing it again and again, none of that time is ever wasted. You've probably heard the phrase, you know, families that pray together stay together, right? And there's a lot of value in that. In fact, we do that with our kids. We pray with our kids every single night before we go to bed, before they go to bed, individually with each one, talk about their day, pray for their day. But here's the deal. I'm pro-prayer. I want to encourage you to pray with your kids. It models for them how to talk to their Heavenly Father. At the same time, I have seen families that prayed together, did that religious thing, and when I see their kids older in life, they do not want to go home to that home anymore. Just because they pray doesn't make that happen. I think there's some authenticity that comes with that. I think there's a lot of things that happen. It's not just playing together or praying together that allows families to stay together. But at the same time, I believe likewise that families who play together also stay together. I think there's a value of what happens when families actually engage and play and do things over and over at a play level, a make-believing level, embracing creativity with kids level. You know, if you wanna have a long-term relationship with your kids when they are grown and old and out of your home, and you want them to see your place, your home, as a place that they want to return to, then you have today got to make your home a place of joy and enjoyment and pleasure. I mean, it's one of the things that Julie and I try to do all the time, and we're just realizing how valuable that is. I mean, we do things like shoot model rockets in the backyard and do archaeological digs and have princess dances to Belle's theme song on our driveway. I mean, you know, we do things to try to make our home a place of play where our kids love being in our home, love being around us, because we want them someday to say, man, I want to go home because there are memories that are here. I remember the carnivals in the backyard. We had one of those carnivals, not quite as extensive, in our backyard a few weeks ago. We've had them a few years ago too. I want my kids to see the value of this. You see, if your kids only see your home as a place of obligation, I can guarantee you, when they have a choice, they will not return home. They won't return home when they have a choice. Families that play together stay together. Paul talked about this a little bit in Ephesians chapter 6. He said, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger by the way you treat them. Rather, bring them up with the discipline and instruction that comes from the Lord. Now, obviously, one of our roles as parents is to instruct, to train, to discipline. I mean, that's just a given. I mean, there may be other people in our lives that also support us in that, but as parents, it is our primary role to instruct, to discipline, and to train and bring our children up in the way of the Lord. It's primarily our role. At the same time, there's something about what Paul's saying here. Don't provoke your children to anger. What he's saying is, hey, if all you're doing is discipline, if all you're doing is correcting, if all you're doing is those hard things, but you're never investing in the creativity, never investing in the playtime, never doing things over and over and creating a home of enjoyment, your kids, they're you're going to provoke them to a place where they don't want to return when they're older. They're not going to want to return. See, there's a value when we invest, when we play. It builds into them today. It builds in them tomorrow. It leaves a legacy with our children in a way that makes them want to come home. I had one of those moments last night. I mean, I struggle with this. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm learning this. I execute it really well, and then I'll execute it really bad the next day. Just last night, you know, I was helping get the kids down for bed, and I blew up at one of my daughters, and you know, I'm feeling really bad about it. I go in, and I'm the one that's praying with her that night. I laid down in her bed. We were talking, and I said, you know, Maggie, she's five. what are you going to say about your dad when you're like 20 or 25? And this is where I'm like, are you going to remember what I just did, or are you going to have better memories than that? And that's what that moment was right there. And she just got this big smile on her face. I'd already apologized. I'm like, Maggie, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have got upset with you. Because it really was, I needed to correct her, but I didn't need to get upset. And she looked at me and just smiled and started talking and telling me about what she'll remember and the things. It had nothing to do with that moment. It was all the times that we play and the memories she's made. And, you know, that is my greatest anxiety. My greatest anxiety as a father is thinking, you know, in 20 years from now, what are my kids going to think about? Because, I mean, Julie and I know, we do some great things for our kids, and we know there's some deficits. We know there's places where we don't hit the mark. We know there's places where we struggle, but I really struggle with what my kids are going to think of me as a father. And I heard this phrase from a guy by the name of Todd Henry recently, really connected with me. He said, if I die unknown, an unknown and unaccomplished man, but my kids know that they are loved, then I will go to the grave a great man. But I'll go to the grave.
Well, one day, my secretary comes running into the office. George, you never believe it. Somebody's playing Kane's Arcade. And I go, no way. So I was looking through the security camera, watching them.
And I'm playing, like, miniature soccer, miniature basketball. And then when you score a point, he would crawl into the box, and he pulls out these little tickets out of the side of the cardboard.
Like, real arcade games, tickets come from the bottom.
And I was like, this kid's a genius.
Nirvan came back one day when Kane wasn't here, and he told me, do you mind if I make a short film about Kane's Arcade? I said, well, actually, it's kind of like a little joke around here, because you're his only customer.
I was blown away. Kane's only sold one fun pass. Like, the fun pass is an awesome deal.
So Nirvan said, well, what if I can get him a couple customers? And I said, that would make his day. If you can get him one customer, he'll be happy.
And at that point, we hatched a plan to invite everybody in L.A. to come play Kane's Arcade. The idea was to do a surprise flash mob at Kane's Arcade on Sunday afternoon.
And I'm thinking, who's going to come down to a junkyard Sunday afternoon, East L.A.? Who's really going to show up?
Then I made a little Facebook event, which a friend posted on Hidden L.A., which has over 230,000 fans. And all of a sudden, it just started going viral.
Nirvan put it over the internet. And all of a sudden, within an hour, we had NBC News here.
Then I hit the front page of Reddit, which is like being on the front page of the internet.
I started reading the comments. I wish I could be there. I live in New York. I wish I could be there. I live in Europe. And I'm like, wow, it was getting big. The plan is I'm going to take Kane to Shakey's Pizza. We're going to play some arcade games. We're going to eat lunch while Nirvan sets up a big surprise party. Kane has no idea what we're doing. And when we get back, he's had the biggest surprise of his life.
And the idea is just to get as many people as we can to come out to Kane's Arcade and just make his day.
Kane's dying to have one customer show up to his arcade. So Kane is going to be the most surprised little boy in the whole wide world.
Hey, you're ready. In about a minute, he's going to arrive here.
Hey, Kane, can we go home early today? We had no customers today.
No.
No? Come on. Dad's tired.
No can do.
No can do. Back, Kane. Wow. What's going on over here? Huh? We finally got some customers here.
Everybody, all these people came here to play your arcade. Did you know they were coming?
No.
Are you ready to run your arcade?
Yeah.
All right, what'd you guys come here to do?
We came to play!
Go ahead. Welcome to Kane's Arcade, man.
But the A could also be for auto parts, cause it's pop shops where it's made. And the I's gotta be for imagination, of which the kids got a lot. And the N ought to be for noggin, where the idea first got thought. But then the E.
Oh yes, the E.
Oh yes, the E.
Oh yes, the E.
Well, the E's gotta be for everybody.
Yes, you
agree. Cause everybody's who's invited to come on down and play. You got the pluck to try your luck. Come on down to Kane's Arcade. Oh, Kane's Arcade.
Kane's Arcade.
Oh, Kane's Arcade.
Kane's Arcade.
It's the best cardboard arcade ever been made.
Ever made.
Grab yourself a fun pass and y'all come on down and play. If you got the pluck to try your luck, get on down to Kane's Arcade.